Stay tuned for one of the most fascinating programs you'll ever hear as we explore the strange and mysterious world of the paranormal and UFOs. Welcome to the Paranet Continuum, a weekly program dealing with extraordinary claims of the paranormal on Earth and beyond. Whether or not you believe in the paranormal, the controversies are real, and this program will try to get to the bottom of it. Your host is Michael Corbin, Director of Paranet Information Services, a global communications network based near Denver, Colorado, dedicated to the investigation of parapsychology, futuristic science, and the UFO enigma. We invite you to keep an open mind as we discuss some of the most fascinating and strange subjects around. Now here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And good evening. Tonight, it's considered the number one censored news story of 1995. It's called HARP. No, not the kind that angels play, and that's the name of the book, by the way. We'll get to that in a second. But it's the High Energy Atmospheric Auroral Research Project going on up in Alaska. We're talking secret government tonight, folks, and it's a project that I think could spell big trouble for all of humanity. Our guest tonight is Dr. Nick Begich. He has written a book about the HARP project. It's called Angels Don't Play This HARP. We're going to get to hear about that and get the lowdown on this potentially serious situation in just a moment. I guess before we get to the serious stuff, I got a couple of stupid things or stupider things that that we've got that we've talked about. I got an article here from the Denver Post dated February 3rd, Saturday. UFOs get their own landing strip. Space aliens at last have their own landing strip in the Nevada desert, courtesy of the state. Desolate State Route 375 has been officially christened the Extraterrestrial Highway, a nod by the state's transportation board to the area's reputation for otherworldly sightings and a ploy to attract more terrestrial money-spending tourists. Four highway signs proclaiming the new status will go up in the next couple of months. Of course, they're going to be both horizontal and vertical, so extraterrestrials can see them as they land, chuckled Tom Tate, executive director of the Nevada Commission on Tourism. Nevada Governor Bob Miller, the chairman of the board that voted the new designation on Thursday, suggested that the signs be placed flat on the ground so that aliens can land on them. Of more earthly concern, though, is making the signs big enough, maybe 8 feet wide. Otherwise, if they're small, we're worried they'll be stolen, said Tom Steffens, director of Nevada's Department of Transportation. Wouldn't that be a nice decoration for your room if you were a teenager? The highway sits 140 miles northeast of Las Vegas and, more importantly, just outside a top-secret Air Force range known informally as, guess what, Area 51. The blacktop runs through an isolated swath of desert that has long been a mecca for UFO seekers from around the world. Visitors and locals alike tell stories of seeing spaceships with odd lights traveling at warp speeds. The fact that all these sightings are close to a secret installation where experimental aircraft are believed to be tested has only fueled rumors that the military is testing captured alien spaceships there. Not surprisingly, the government denies this. But Nevada has never been shy about coming up with gimmicks to make a little money, and the campaign to publicize the desert as a potential spaceport for extraterrestrials and a destination for their earthbound friends has been bubbling along for a while. That's into that article. Isn't that stupid? Now, remember last year they took away that the land. There was that big controversy. They got tired of having people up there, so they did this. Now they're upset because they need more people, more tourists. I guess they can't make up their mind or else something else is going on. But anyway, also saw something on sightings that really took the cake, I think. They're selling an alien, the kind that was portrayed in the Roswell movie, for $1,700. So if you're inclined to do that, go down and buy one at Sharper Image for $1,700. Of course, I think that's pretty stupid. If you got $1,700 to spend on an alien, come and see me. I probably could get you something that was more valuable. Okay. All right, let's get back to our subject tonight. The name of the book is Angels Don't Play This HARP, and my guest tonight is Dr. Nick Begich, and he is an MD in complementary medicines. He lives in Alaska. He was a member now of the Alaska Federation of Teachers. His family has been politically active in Alaska for the last 30 years. The book details a project that the government calls HARP, and it's this book that he has published threatens to reveal large-scale weather patterns that HARP can actually alter, global communications, your health, the integrity of your mind, control over your mental processes, wildlife migration patterns, Earth's upper atmosphere. And I'll get Nick on here to explain it in more detail to us. Good evening, Nick. Hello, Nick. Are you there? I guess we don't have Nick. We're going to get him here in just a moment, so bear with us. Actually, now, I'll give you a little more information on what HARP is. Apparently, according to Nick's book, did you know that ground-based Star Wars systems is being built in the Alaska bush? It's intended to disrupt the electric shield that circles our planet. The U.S. military calls it Zapper HARP, and it's a high-frequency, active, auroral research program. It's a mouthful. But the multi-gigawatt Skybuster is not about the Northern Lights. The military wants to exploit the ionosphere for Department of Defense purposes. Geophysical and environmental warfare, for example, their first target is the Electrojet, a river of electricity that flows thousands of miles through the sky and down into the polar ice cap. The Electrojet will become a vibrating artificial antenna for sending electromagnetic radiation raining down into the Earth. Why this unnatural radiation? Well, it's so the U.S. military can X-ray the Earth and talk to submarines. But there's much more that they can do with HARP-type technology. And this book threatens to reveal surprises from secret meetings. And I guess we have Nick. Good evening, Dick. Nick.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. Thank you for being on the program. You know, give us an overview of the book. What is the book going to tell us?
Basically, what we've done is we spent the last year sort of combing through a good deal of government documents, media reports, and other materials related to the HARP project, and then related science. And what we've done is compile it in a pretty concise form, just sort of laying out sort of the history behind the science, the corporations involved in the project, and basically the military plans for this brand-new weapon system that they're testing here in Alaska.
Okay, now I have to admit, when I read this stuff, it actually does frighten me a bit to read this, the potential that this has. What let's talk first about the idea that it was considered to be the most censored reporting of the whole year of 95. We never heard much about HARP. What happened?
Basically, it was set up originally. The way it was posed to the public here was a basic research project being operated from the University of Alaska Geophysical Institute up near Fairbanks, which is central part of the state. When we started looking at the material and started reviewing, you know, sort of the history behind it, it was obvious to us that it had become much more than that. In fact, as we researched it, we compiled over 400 source documents, and from those we necked it down to really the top 150 or 200 to utilize in the book and in footnote form. But essentially what we found is that the project is a proof of concept project for the United States military, sort of the advanced stage of a new weapons capability that this transmitter offers them.
Okay. All right, well, we come back from our break. We'll get into a lot more in depth about what HARP is and my guest's research into the program. And he is the author, again, of a book called Angels Don't Play This HARP. And we'll get down to taking your calls as well. 1-800-836-2009. 1-800-836-2009 is a toll-free number. Again, my guest is Dr. Nick Begich, and I'm Michael Corbin. And you're listening to the Paranet Continuum. We'll be right back.
There are many magazines about UFOs. Continuum is different. Continuum is the official quarterly publication of Paranet and MICAP, and is the outgrowth of Paranet's worldwide communications network on paranormal phenomena. It's in-depth, challenging, and above all, fascinating. It takes a straight-ahead, no-nonsense look at UFOs, worldwide sighting reports, parapsychology, abduction phenomena, futuristic science, and much, much more. You can get Continuum for just $18 a year. Continuum is also available by fax for a small additional fee. Be informed. Call now and subscribe to Continuum. Call 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-836-6381. Continuum, published by Paranet Information Services and MICAP. Order yours today at 1-800-UFO-NET-1. Continuum, one of the most fascinating magazines you'll ever read.
Learn more about UFOs and the paranormal with the Paranet Catalog. Paranet, the world's foremost network of the paranormal, has a new catalog for 1996 with an updated list of previous Paranet Continuum radio shows, available on cassette for $8 each, two for $6, or three or more for $5 each. You can also order Paranet's famous black T-shirt with its stunning design of galaxies, stars, and comets, the logos for Paranet and our sister group MICAP, and a beautiful blue, green, and white planet Earth. There's a complete Alien Grays T-shirt catalog, information on Paranet's website and computer networks, and on how to subscribe to Continuum, Paranet's official quarterly magazine. To get your catalog or to order, call 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-UFO-6381. Paranet, your window on the paranormal, at 1-800-UFO-6381.
Mysteries of the paranormal, UFOs, future science, parapsychology, angelic phenomena, ghosts, secret projects, government cover-ups, hoaxes, and frauds. We cover it all on the Paranet Continuum. Now back to your host, Michael Corbin.
And welcome back, my guest in Alaska, Dr. Nick Begich. We're talking about his book, Angels Don't Play That Harp, or This Harp, I'm sorry, Angels Don't Play This Harp. Nick, what is Project HARP?
Okay, what the there's two ways to look at this one. One is the way the government's officially telling the story, and then, of course, what we've been able to sort of deduce from the record. But what the government is a number of things. First, they say that it's a communications project, primarily for creating long waves where they can create a system for communicating with submarines. But what they're utilizing to do that, basically, is bouncing a signal off of the ionosphere, which is a portion above of the bubble. You can visualize a bubble covering the Earth. That's about 50 to 620 miles above the Earth's surface, and this is also a protective layer for keeping incoming radiations of various kinds from entering our environment. What they intend to do is modulate that the ionosphere and actually change it to a virtual antenna in the sky for broadcasting long waves for communication purposes. One of the other applications that they've talked about is what's funded for 1996, which is Earth-penetrating tomography, which is an application whereby they can look into the Earth's surface several kilometers deep for underground nuclear facilities and underground tunnels and so forth.
Now, all of this sounds kind of, you know, routine in some ways, but I guess we know, don't we know, or isn't there research that's shown that low-frequency electromagnetic radiation is not healthy for human beings?
Right. In fact, this is one of the primary areas that we're concerned with, is what we know about this year's applications, for instance, is Earth-penetrating tomography, is they're going to be operating the system between 1 and 30 hertz, which happens to correlate to predominant brainwave frequencies in human beings. And what we also know from the research is that these same frequencies can be used to essentially drive human brain waves into these very specific patterns to create very specific moods. In fact, the research that we pulled from was initially Air Force research going back to, well, actually going back to the 1980s, and then work before that, work by Jose Delgado while he was at Yale University, showed that you could utilize a radio frequency, a pulsed radio frequency, to create mood swings and actual dramatic changes in behavior in animals and humans. And he was able to demonstrate this at power levels much below the power levels that HARP will be operating at.
Now, Delgado, Dr. Delgado is, I guess in some ways, a bad word, because wasn't he the fellow that pioneered the Stimaceiver research and all that stuff?
He was doing a lot of things in the 60s in terms of brain research, and the book that sort of sets him out in terms of who he was he wrote a book called Physical Control of the Mind Towards a Psycho-Civilized Society, which is a scary thought in and of itself. But what his interest was actually manipulating behavior, using external drivers.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And what he eventually came to was a method for doing that. And what HARP really represents, when we looked into the record on this type of technology, we were led in a couple directions. One was to a document called Low Intensity Conflict in Modern Technology, which was put together by the United States Air Force, which indicated that this kind of weapon system, a radio frequency weapon system for battlefield applications, was, you know, well underway in terms of research back in the mid-80s.
Mm-hmm.
And then what we also found was earlier research from a gentleman by the name of J.F. Gordon McDonald, who was a geophysicist at UCLA, and he was also a science advisor to Lyndon Johnson. And what he indicated was, with the right kind of technology, which at the time he wrote this was 1969, it was not available. And what he wrote in was a book called Unless Peace Comes. He had written a chapter on geophysical warfare. And he indicated that if they could create a weapon system that would pulse radio frequency into the ionosphere to create a returning signal of enough power density that they could, in fact, create changes in human behavior over a very large area, which in 1969, they didn't have the technology to do that. By the 1980s, the patents that are associated with HARP that we sort of break down, in fact, there's 12 of them we break down in the book, show, in fact, how the science has developed to the point where they can create the energy densities necessary to create all of those physiological effects that were predicted as far back as 1969.
Well, that is... Go ahead.
I'm sorry. There's one more document I got to lay in front of our audience to get it in perspective.
Okay.
Bringing it back up to 1994, there was a document put out by the International Red Cross in Geneva, and this one was analyzing the implications of new weapon systems in terms of international law and just the basic global politics. And in that, they lay out the frequency ranges for both, for a number of things, biological effects, creating errors, bit errors in computers, and then effects using radio frequency or microwave weapons for actually melting circuitry. And when those frequency ranges are matched against HARP planning documents, which we had radio engineers do, they correlate. In other words, HARP has that full range of capability that the International Red Cross is now expressing concern over.
That's absolutely incredible, and it's very frightening that you know, something of this magnitude is going on, and they're getting ready to... I take it they haven't turned it on yet?
Well, they've been testing it at low power levels, approximately... I say low, but it's all relative. It's at approximately one-third of a billion watts that they've been running on. The antenna array that they've designed and have constructed that is completed will go up to 1 billion watts of effective radiated power. And then the second phase of the project, scheduled for 1997, will increase that to 4.7 billion watts, and they have a desired power level expressed in their planning documents of up to 100 billion watts of effective radiated power. And what's going to happen is they're going to radiate the ionosphere to create a number of differing effects for all of these various weapons applications. And we've really only touched on a few, because it's a multifaceted hammer that these guys have built here. But in, you know, it has this capability that of generating huge power densities in an area that previously we were unable to get that kind of power, short of thermonuclear detonation in the upper atmosphere, which actually, in one of the patents, was sort of was mentioned as sort of a precursor to this weapon system, because they can create similar effects, not in the radiation range in terms of fallout, but in terms of radiating back an electromagnetic pulse for affecting electronic circuitry and sensitive equipment. This device actually replaces a thermonuclear detonation in the upper atmosphere when it's deployed for that purpose. So it does have a huge, huge potential capability that has not been adequately debated, has not been placed in front of the American public for consideration in a way that we would hope that weapons of this type would bring themselves forward.
Now, I understand the word Tesla comes up in some of this stuff, and I want you to keep that in mind when we come back from the break. I want to hear about how Tesla or his research has influenced this and what the impact might be, toward toward this program. And, keep in mind, this, you said up to 100 billion watts?
That's the
potential?
Power levels that they want this system to expand to. And it's like any weapon system. It starts out at one stage and just keeps growing. And this one is no exception.
Okay. All right, hold that thought. We'll come back and get to that business about Tesla, too, and the influence
Great.
That it's had on that. 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-836-2009. Give us a call. My guest is Dr. Nick Begich, and we're talking about a book called Angels Don't Play This Harp. And it sounds like we got some psycho stuff going on up in Alaska, and we're getting some pretty interesting information on this. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet Continuum.
It's been said that the pen is mightier than the sword. With Paranet, the computer and modem is mightier than the pen. Paranet is the world's foremost electronic authority on UFOs and the paranormal. Paranet gives you rapid access to UFO researchers and others like you who want to know what's going on. You'll find stimulating discussions with an interactive link to the world through the Internet's information superhighway. There's a variety of departments dealing with paranormal activities, parapsychology, alien abduction research, conspiracy theories and government cover-ups, and cutting-edge science. There's even a skeptics conference. Paranet also has the world's most comprehensive database of news articles, sighting reports, and much more available for a small fee. So plug into power and knowledge with Paranet. Call the data line at 303-863-0469. That's 303-863-0469. Or for more information, contact Paranet at 303-863-0484.
Pilots depend on accurate, timely information, both in the cockpit and on the ground. Skyway Publications helps with both. The Skyway Airport Directory and Entertainment Guide provides convenient, accurate information for safe flight and landing operations, as well as local businesses that cater to pilots. These are free, pocket-sized guides with information on large and small airports nationwide, along with technical information, fuel and airport services, and businesses that can make life easier for pilots. Keep in mind, it's free. Check your local airport for the Skyway Publications Airport Directory and Entertainment Guide, or call area 970-669-1800. Call Skyway today and find out how the guide can also be a financial opportunity for you. Skyway Publications, your ticket to safer, cheaper, and more convenient flight. Check your local airport or call Skyway at 970-669-1800.
This is the Paranet Continuum, where we answer questions and question answers. And we want to know what you think. Call us and stay tuned. Now back to your host, the Director of Paranet Information Services, Michael Corbin.
1-800-836-2009, 1-800-836-2009. And as Blake said, coming in from the break, we want to hear what you think. If you've got any comments or opinions on this, I'd like to hear from you. My guest is Dr. Nick Begich. We're talking about a book, Angels Don't Play This Harp. Nick, back to this this Project Harp and Tesla. How does Tesla figure into this?
Okay, originally, when we first started researching this project, I had actually seen a reference to an article in Nexus magazine, and it was referencing an article in the Anchorage Daily News, which is in my neighborhood. So the consequence was I went to the library and researched the article in terms of what, you know, where what it was saying was there were a series of patents that were being used in a new weapon system in Alaska. When I pulled those patents, within them were references to Tesla's work, and these patents were actually used on the HARP project, and they were from the late 1980s. And the earlier work referencing Tesla, and Tesla was sort of the creative energy behind one of the inventors in terms of stimulating his creative thought. And what Tesla's system that had stimulated that thought were two New York Times articles that were talking about his weapon system, a high-energy weapon system that he was proposing as early as 1915, but the last formal proposal in the beginning of World War II in an attempt to get the United States government to build a weapon that he described as sending 50 million volt potentials like bolts of lightning knocking out aircraft coming into American airspace. So that was where the actual weapon system design concept is sort of rooted in Tesla's work with those kinds of systems going as far back as the 40s and even 1915.
Right. Now this also comes down to some other serious concerns that people might have, knowing the background of Nikola Tesla, which was he was a very mysterious man, of course. But there was rumors that the 1908 Tunguska fireball that occurred in Siberia might have been connected to Tesla. Is there any truth to that, or is there any possibility of that?
You know, that's come up a number of times as we've been on radio and even in other forums. And, you know, there is some speculation that, in fact, when he was in Colorado Springs experimenting with very large coils, that he may have tried to send a signal over the pole to, I guess it was Perry, was it, who was on the North Pole at the time. In any case, there is that speculation. There is also that possibility. I mean, we couldn't say definitively that happened.
Well, didn't he cause some?
Tesla did it.
Didn't he cause some type of maybe an earthquake or some kind of movement in New York on an experiment?
Yes, that is historically attributed to him in New York City. He had really focused on the resonating frequencies and harmonics. In terms of planetary harmonics, which was this whole concept for broadcasting energy and creating effects at great distance where a small input would result in a very large output. And in that sense, this project, those are what we call nonlinear effects, that concept is being applied in the HARP project as well, because their intent is by focusing energy at just the right points in the ionosphere, and they've mapped those points by mapping magnetic lines of force grids in the northern hemisphere at University of Alaska Fairbanks using barium-laden rockets. So they focus the energy, if you will, small input into these magnetic lines of force, and by resonating at frequencies that correlate to those lines of force, you can create very large effects. And those are the effects that the military is after in this specific case, which goes back again to some of those basic concepts of Tesla.
Now, when you talk about harmonics, is there not a you said that they were going to use the frequency range of 1 to 30 hertz. Is that correct?
In one particular application, yes. But their range on this project is got a very broad sweep.
So they can go like up in the microwave frequencies.
Right. And what they're doing here in this particular instance is using the radio wave is more or less a carrier for this pulsed frequency. And then what happens at the ionospheric level, they change the ionosphere, which is a charged area in any case. They change it in a way that actually makes it act like a giant antenna in the sky and send back a long wave back to the Earth, which then they use for this one particular application, Earth penetrating tomography.
Now,
but they have other, you know, they have other capabilities with this particular project as well.
Okay, but now,
beyond that.
Now that, what is the frequency that the Earth resonates at, the natural frequency?
7.883 is what's normally referred to as Schumann's resonance, but it does vary slightly, actually, from in various locations on the planet, but that's probably as good a number as any.
Now, just from my own limited knowledge of electronics, isn't there a possibility that when you mess around with stuff like that at that frequency, down that low, couldn't you set up some type of a resonance that could disrupt or even crack the Earth?
That's speculation also with
with
Tesla. And in terms of if you set up a resonant frequency in harmony with the Earth, can't you, in fact, the same effect as troops marching across the bridge and several hours later the bridge collapsed because of more or less the resonance effect and the standing wave left in place. And there's that speculation on this that they could, in fact, create a runaway effect that doesn't stabilize in the way that they envision. And, you know, the thing that we're concerned about is all of these issues that are being raised as we go around the country and talk on this subject are all legitimate questions that we don't think are adequately explored, because the military's interest in this project is driven too much by the need to get bigger and better weapon systems out of this.
Get them online and working.
Yeah.
Even though they might blow up the Earth in the process. Okay, Well, even fry us.
It's their history, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're not talking about frying eggs. a billion.
It is their history. I mean, it's...
One gigawatt of power is...
Project.
Yeah, 1 gigawatt of power is pretty intense. Let's take a call. We've got a caller calling in from our affiliate KCNR in Salt Lake City. Ron, good evening. What's your question for our guest?
Yeah, I had a question. In Waco, I believe the British had used sound waves on the residents of Waco. I was wondering if you knew anything about it, and if you knew of any instances where they had been used on American systems.
Okay, that's a very good question, Ron. I was going to get to that next with our guest, Dr. Nick Bajic.
There is.
What's that?
There is a couple of instances. On the Waco situation, they did look at using psychotronic weapon systems that were developed in the Soviet Union, and they did use strobes and sound, you know, to try and affect the behavior. I would certainly guess that they used some of these other more exotic systems as well. And I think there's a little confusion on the story, because there was actually reports of them using low-frequency weapon systems in controlling a riot, I believe it was.
Right.
In England somewhere.
I think
the fact is the weapon systems do exist. There's no question. It's just a question of there's never been one quite so big as a HARP transmitter.
Okay, hold on to that. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about this. So we're talking about Project HARP. It's the it's an incredible project, and it's actually quite frightening at the potential, the implications it has. My guest is Dr. Nick Bajic. Give us a call, 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-836-2009. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet Continuum. We'll be right back.
There are many magazines about UFOs. Continuum is different. Continuum is the official quarterly publication of Paranet and MICAP, and is the outgrowth of Paranet's worldwide communications network on paranormal phenomena. It's in-depth, challenging, and above all, fascinating. It takes a straight-ahead, no-nonsense look at UFOs, worldwide sighting reports, parapsychology, abduction phenomena, futuristic science, and much, much more. You can get Continuum for just $18 a year. Continuum is also available by fax for a small additional fee. Be informed. Call now and subscribe to Continuum. Call 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-836-6381. Continuum, published by Paranet Information Services and MICAP. Order yours today at 1-800-UFO-NET-1. Continuum, one of the most fascinating magazines you'll ever read.
Learn more about UFOs and the paranormal with the Paranet Catalog. Paranet, the world's foremost network of the paranormal, has a new catalog for 1996.
with an updated list of previous Paranet Continuum radio shows, available on cassette for $8 each, two for $6, or three or more for $5 each. You can also order Paranet's famous black T-shirt with its stunning design of galaxies, stars, and comets, the logos for Paranet and our sister group MyCap, and a beautiful blue, green, and white planet Earth. There's a complete Alien Grays T-shirt catalog, information on Paranet's website and computer networks, and on how to subscribe to Continuum, Paranet's official quarterly magazine. To get your catalog or to order, call 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-UFO-6381. Paranet, your window on the paranormal, at 1-800-UFO-6381.
UFOs for real, or are they just fiction, or imagination, or disinformation? To find out, stay tuned for more of the Paranet Continuum with your host, Michael Corbin.
And welcome back, my guest, Dr. Nick Begich. We're talking about a book that he has written, co-authored with Gene Manning. The book is called Angels Don't Play This Harp, and we're talking about advances in Tesla technology. Now, Nick, with the last week here, particularly in Denver, in the Denver area, we just came out of the deep freeze today. We've had some really cold temperatures, and we know that actually the country has experienced some really bizarre weather lately. How much of this could possibly be related to HARP?
Okay, in terms of HARP itself, this is one of the difficulties in really laying out some of this. We know that HARP has a capability of influencing weather patterns over a very large geographic area. The problem is there's no independent monitoring indicating when the firing of the system actually is taking place, so it can be correlated to changes in weather patterns. But the patents themselves and the research we've done points to two specific ways in which the system can be used for influencing weather. And the first method is one where a large amount of energy is literally pushed into the ionosphere, lifting up a section of the ionosphere that could be, in fact, many hundreds of kilometers across. And by lifting it a couple of hundred kilometers high, they create drag forces, which then change local wind patterns, which then, of course, have a reaction that's felt around the planet. The other way that weather patterns can be influenced is they have mapped sort of circling the Earth in a number of different paths by which moisture travels that are a little bit different than the jet streams, but have been documented as carrying as much moisture as the Amazon River in each one of these five major streams of moisture. And what you can do with a HARP-type transmitter working in conjunction with, say, a smaller transmitter, and they do have a number of these systems around the world, some of them configured like HARP, some a little differently, but where they can actually create a standing wave or more or less a wall of energy in the upper atmosphere, deflecting these rivers of moisture in such a way as to deny certain areas moisture and then grant moisture to other areas. So it could be used in the way of more or less to manipulate or push weather fronts. The kinds of things that we're experiencing across the country, in fact, internationally, in terms of anomalous or intense weather that increasingly has become more intense in the last several years, could be likened to the system, the planet itself, releasing large amounts of energy, which it does in weather patterns. It does in earthquakes, which incidentally are also increasing in frequency, depth, and magnitude, and also in tidal heights, which in the North Sea have also been increasing. You know, and all of these things indicate a destabilized Earth system that's trying to let, you know, release energy in all of these different ways, and yet here we have now a military weapon designed to inject even more energy into an already destabilized system, and to inject that energy at critical points where energy is more or less sucked into the system and resonated or increased in its effect. And this is, again, another one of our big concerns. We may be sitting on the edge of precipitating a major problem for this planet.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you think these guys are just plain psychopathic or crazy? Or do you think that there's been actual research maybe funded that maybe we're just overly concerned about this and they know that there's not going to be anything that substantially could come of it other than making it an effective weapon?
No, I think these people are basically reckless. And I think that a review of the science and certainly the biological effects is well worth considering. If, in fact, the system does what they're suggested it's going to do, which is punch holes in the ionosphere, and, you know, these aren't our words. These are their words. And, you know, we've taken and put that in book form, but then most recently they've been aired in Coast to Coast in Canada and in the United States this weekend on a show called Sightings, where they actually acknowledge that that's what they intend to do. And then they quickly say, oh, but don't worry, things will restabilize at a relatively quick rate. And maybe they will and maybe they won't, but the point of the matter
is, I guess we'll only have one chance to find out. You know,
yeah.
They flip
yeah.
the switch and it's going to be, you know,
and then we all get to find out. And, you know, I'm not too excited about these guys' approach to life generally, and much less with a system that has not it's not been debated adequately. Too small of a circle of people are involved in this project.
It just makes you wonder.
And the biological scientists are not represented at all. And it's not like the first time the military has come into Alaska or into other areas of the country with their experiments, and then 20, 30, 40, 50 years later, we find out, you know, they've been doing things that none of us would have ever tolerated then or now. And in Alaska's situation, we were able to go to the government records. We were able to pull enough material where we're not waiting that 20, 30, 40, 50 years, but we know in advance as the project's just getting underway what some of those effects are, and we're asking people to consider those effects and whether or not we should institute this kind of weapon.
I think we get sillier as time goes on. I mean, people spending $1,700 to buy an alien, and these maniacs getting ready to throw the switch. It's incredible. How much money are we talking about in this project? How much have they spent?
Okay.
Or is this going to shock us?
No, it probably. Well, you know, they've got it so compartmentalized that you got to kind of link it together in big bite-sized bits. And the first part of it is, of course, the HAARP transmitter site itself, which is $30 million, which doesn't seem like a great deal of money. But the next phase is scheduled at around $200 million, and then to get it up to a full-blown weapon system, it'll go into the billions. But the diagnostics that go with it, they upgraded the rocket range at Poker Flats, Alaska, with another $30 million in upgrades. They put in a Cray computer at $25 million at the University of Fairbanks. They're talking about the state funding a power intertie by this area at $150 million, which would give them, of course, power availability to go up to a higher power density coming off the antenna array. I mean, there's a lot of ancillary projects, diagnostics, little sub-projects that are somehow tied into this one. It could probably range into the billions if you really collected all the material.
Do you think some of this money is coming from the military black budget?
I believe so. I think at a certain level, particularly when we start talking about non-lethal weapons technology, which we commit a good portion of our book to discussing what that is and how that works. I think a lot of that money is being black budgeted. It's interesting to note, though, that a lot of these non-lethals now are being transferred to the United States Justice Department under policies.
I wonder why. You know,
that should be a big concern to people.
It should. It should, but it's not. I mean, it's like, you know, it seems like everybody's asleep out there. Maybe they've given us some sleeping powders or something. I don't know. You know, how many How many public comments, for example, governors or senators or anybody like that, surely somebody is, you know, in politics or in the government, somebody is, you know, against this. Are you hearing anything like this at all?
Not yet. You know, I mean, we're the ones who raised the alarm, so to speak. Our book's been out a short time. It is generating a great deal of interest. We're starting to get calls from politicians and would-be politicians wanting to know about the project because their constituents are asking them to explain it, and they're not coming up with adequate explanations. And so I suppose, you know, we here in Alaska sounded the alarm in over the last couple of years, but most particularly in September when we put this book out. It's gotten a lot of attention. We've gotten a lot of radio, and if it wasn't for talk radio, we probably wouldn't have this issue out at all. So we're very appreciative of what you guys do out there.
Well, yeah, until they zap the the satellite.
Until they turn us all off.
Yeah, until they turn us all off.
In the meantime, we can still talk, and I think that's, you know, there's a lot of material coming out now, and everyone, I think, in America has come to the realization that aside from politicians being generally untrustworthy, the media sort of fits right in after that, with the exception of alternative medias. And I think everyone has got their own source of alternative one at least, where they go for their real news. And I think people have kind of given up.
Okay.
Mainstream.
Nick, hold that. We got to go to our last break. When we come back, we're going to give it information from you as to how people can get a hold of the book or contact you about this very important information, Project HARP. Oh, boy, what a mess. The book is Angels Don't Play This Harp. My guest is Dr. Nick Begich. Don't move. We're going to give you information on how to get this book. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet Continuum.
It's been said that the pen is mightier than the sword. With Paranet, the computer and modem is mightier than the pen. Paranet is the world's foremost electronic authority on UFOs and the paranormal. Paranet gives you rapid access to UFO researchers and others like you who want to know what's going on. You'll find stimulating discussions with an interactive link to the world through the Internet's information superhighway. There's a variety of departments dealing with paranormal activities, parapsychology, alien abduction research, conspiracy theories and government cover-ups, and cutting-edge science. There's even a skeptics conference. Paranet also has the world's most comprehensive database of news articles, sighting reports, and much more available for a small fee. So plug into power and knowledge with Paranet. Call the data line at 303-863-0469. That's 303-863-0469. Or for more information, contact Paranet at 303-863-0484.
This is an invitation for investors to get personally involved in Paranet. Paranet is more than just this radio show. Paranet Information Services, Incorporated is dedicated to exploration of the UFO enigma and other paranormal phenomena. Paranet also publishes Continuum Magazine and operates online UFO and paranormal computer services. If you're a qualified investor who shares our enthusiasm, give us a call. Contact Brian Wood at 970-635-2494. That's Brian Wood at 970-635-2494.
Who was the hero of your childhood? Was it President Kennedy or Martin Luther King? Or was it some teacher who changed your life? Teachers have the power to wake up young minds, to be heroes, to change lives. America needs some heroes. If you want to shape our future, call 1-800-45-TEACH. Be a teacher. Be a hero. Call 1-800-45-TEACH.
A public service message brought to you by Recruiting New Teachers and the Ad Council.
This is the Paranet Continuum, a weekly program dedicated to the mysterious and fascinating world of UFOs and the paranormal. If you're interested in learning more about Paranet, the world's foremost communications network on the paranormal, call us at 303-863-0484 or write to Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. Once again, here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And returning from Alaska is my guest, Dr. Nick Begich, author. Actually, he's the co-author, and there's another author, Gene. Is it Gene or Genie?
It's Gene.
Gene Manning, and it's a book is called Angels Don't Play This Harp. One quick question, Nick, before we get to the information. I'm just curious. I've seen at times over the last few years, and I've heard reports about this, about skyquakes and also strange illuminations, flashes in the sky. Is there any possibility that this could be related?
Yes. In fact, this is not the only ionosphere, Keter. There are several of them scattered around the planet. The ones in the former Soviet Union were initially attributed to things like the Woodpecker signal, which included anomalous atmospheric phenomena. And this is no different. People around this site report very unusual interactions in the atmosphere as well. So
okay.
It's not an unusual event.
Okay, in about 30 seconds, give information as to how we can get a hold of you to get information and get your book.
Okay, a number that people can call is area code 907-249-9111. And let me give that one more time. It's area code 907-249-9111. And that will give people a mailing address if they want to send for the book, and it'll give them the basic ordering information as well.
Okay. I want to thank you very much for being on the program tonight. It was very interesting. It's frightening, and I hope that you have success in trying to get some, keep beating the drums and getting these people involved in this. I'd like to see something brought to a head on this and get this to stop. Thank you very much, Dr. Nick Begich, author of Angels Don't Play This Harp. Next week, I keep hearing these persistent rumors about Omni Magazine being down for the count. I'm going to check with Keith Farrell and try to give you an update next week. But in the meantime, I want to encourage you to buy Continuum Magazine because, that'll help fill in some of that loss if Omni is gone. You can get a hold of me at 303-863-0484. That's 303-863-0484. And it's been a pleasure, again, having you as my audience tonight, and we'll see you next week. Until then, I'm Michael Corbin telling you to keep your eyes on the skies. Good night.